Hey, this is Fresh, bringing to you the podcast series entitled Fusion, where music, technology, and the creativity of the artist become one.
Hello?
Todd, what's up this evening?
What's going on, man? Glad to be here.
Glad to be here too, man. We've been doing this IM thing for a long time, you know, a couple years now, I guess, and doing the blog thing also.
Yeah.
But at the same time, on separate sides of the United States, been doing a lot of music, man, whether it be recording, performing, whatever the case is. So this is definitely a good opportunity to get together with you and talk a little bit about music technology in the new millennium.
Yeah, we've been like vibing on this one. I don't even know how long.
Yeah, man, it's been a long time, man. So I'm glad the technology is allowing us to go ahead and do this, and you know, let the people know what's going on. You're based out in San Francisco.
Yep, Bay Area. Been here for like over 10 years now.
All right, man. Cool. Sounds good. Give the listeners a little bit of history, a little bit of your feel and flow about what the music scene is like in San Francisco right now.
Well, it's kind of like spread out here in San Francisco. You got your club scene, which has like a lot of house and a lot of dance stuff, but there's also a real rich, deep soul underground, like hip-hop and soul and everything. So like there's a lot of underground artists that play a lot of the clubs here. That's real cool, and it's kind of one of the reasons I really love San Francisco so much, just because there's so much diversity. You know, I mean, if you're like actually living in other parts of the country where there's not so much diversity, you're pretty much spoon-fed what radio and MTV and everything else is telling you what the music of the moment is. But when you come to a place maybe like a New York or a San Francisco and really get out there, you actually see like a lot of these incredible like jazz bands and soul bands and rock and even punk bands out there that's really doing their own thing, like tweaking what the genre is and actually making something new. And it's just all love out here.
Yeah, man, you know what, that's very true, and you make a good point in terms of the freedom and the flexibility to do things musically with respect to the way the commercial industry is these days. And I'm sure you know a great deal about that. You said you've been out in San Francisco for the last 10 years. Do you originate from California, or are you from another area of the states?
No, I'm from Southern California. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. My family's originally from Baton Rouge, New Orleans. And my mother like brought them all out here to L.A., and I was born here like 2 years later, so I'm a California boy.
Cool, I hear that. Well, tell me something, man. Like I said, we've been doing this for a while, and I have a lot of what you have recorded and put out under the name Big L.A. versus Todd. Why don't you go ahead and elaborate on the meaning behind that name?
Oh, man. Well, actually, it came from... I was kind of a late baby in the family, so my mother had me at the same time that my grown sisters had my nieces and nephews.
Okay.
So I grew up in a family full of women, and this was way back when I was actually originally called the Rapping Gemini back in my old rapping days in the 80s. You know, so
right,
that
right.
was a little embarrassing, but the history's there.
Right.
And right around the time Dougie Fresh and Slick Rick came out with Lottie Dottie, I was going to school, the same school with my nieces and my nephews.
Okay.
All around the same age. And instead of going like Lottie Dottie, they were singing Lottie Tottie. So, yeah. So that actually, so for some reason, that became my name. Everybody just started calling me Lottie Tottie. And then when I wanted to really get serious and start making music, I kind of like narrowed it down to like to Lottie T, and then it became just Lottie. But then I went away to college, and
right.
you know that freshman 20 or 30 or 40 that you're supposed to put on when you get there.
Oh yeah,
that was me. You know, that was me. I was just eating and drinking too much, so I ballooned up to like around like 250, 260. So it just became like Big Lot, you know, Big Lottie, and I just said, okay, and just cut it off and just make it Big Lot, and it just stuck.
Sounds cool. Okay.
Yeah. So the whole Big Lot versus Todd thing, I kind of like adopted that because I had my Big Lot side, which was more of a DJ hip hop type thing, and then there was Todd, who was more of a real syrupy soul type guy. So I kind of like combined that into my sound and kind of the beats I'm making. So I kind of wanted to you know, make it so that, you know, it's actually like two sides kind of like trying to fuse and like fight against each other, like when I'm trying to make music.
Yeah, I'm feeling that, man, because I've, like I said, I've heard your tracks, and I think that's a good representation of what you currently have out there.
Yeah,
you know,
cool.
Knowing that you have a couple of at least a couple of websites, which we'll get to later on in the podcast. One thing that I did read about you is that you've been quote unquote concocting beats since the age of 9.
Oh yeah, man. I was it was, you know, back in the day. It's kind of cool because when you talk to a lot of people like around in my age who actually came up and like had a progressive way of actually becoming producers and making beats, is they all kind of relatively started the same way, which is kind of odd because you know you were like in different places. There was no interaction like it is now on the web. It was just basically you were on your own doing your thing. And like back at when I was 9, I would take like my old tape deck and I was making pause mixes, you know, like when you take two cassette decks and you find like a little spot of like a break or something. And like you use one tape deck to play, the other one to record it, so you would pause it and bring it back and then play it over and over and over again. So you're like doing basically what like Red Alert and all the rest of them were doing,
right,
on the turntables.
Right, right.
But you were actually doing it with like a cassette deck.
So. I remember well, right.
Yeah. You were doing that stuff.
Oh, you know it, man. You know what would be interesting if I can get hold of some of those cassettes that I did, you know, pause mixes for, because, you know, as we all know, back in the day, that was the quote unquote technology that we had to work with. So, you know, we made it work for sure.
Like, my mother still gets mad for the fact that I used to rewire her stereo just, you know, just to be able to, like, because I wanted to flip the turntable with the tape deck so I could make some kind of like, you know, blends and stuff like that. So
right.
There'd be wires hanging out the back of her stereo and stuff. She still ain't forgive me for that.
Yeah, man, that's some definite good memories right there for sure. Mm-hmm. And during the time you were making these pause mixes, you know, there was obviously a large genre of variety of music out there at the time. Who was, or I should say, not necessarily who, but what genre was influencing you back then?
It's kind of weird because it's kind of a flip flop to the way it was now. Back then, I was really exposed to like a lot of soul, like the OJs and Lenny Williams and Mays, Frankie Beverly, and all these other people. My sisters and my mother would play this stuff constantly, which kind of made me sick of it. So I was gravitating more toward the radical, more the rebellious stuff. So that's kind of when hip hop was coming up, when you had a lot of like. You had like Run DMC and Curtis Blow and Houdini and all these people. So that's who I was really gravitating to.
Right, right.
But at the same time, I always had that soul, that soul foundation in the back of my head. My sister Pam was one of these people who like just collected vinyl and had like just one wall in her living room was nothing but a giant, you know, a giant dresser full of just vinyl. And she just, I mean, she had it all. I mean, everything from, you know, from Jimi Hendrix, you know, down to like Billy Paul, and she would just play this stuff. And she's like, "You need to check this out. You need to listen to this."
Classic.
I'm like, "Nah,
classic."
Yeah. So, you know, so then actually coming up and getting a little bit older and actually starting to experiment with like, you know, what is the kind of sound that I actually want to put out there, and then realizing that all of this, the soul foundation that my sisters and my mother had given me, was leaking into what I wanted to hear in beats and in music. So it kind of flip-flopped where the soul became more of the influence than the hip-hop. So it was more of like applying hip-hop, what I like about hip-hop, which is mostly the beats, the hard, like 808 drum beat, things like that, and applying that to like more of the syrupy soul, like bass lines and, you know, and strings and stuff like that. So it's kind of like it's just like the name, it's kind of like a fusion of the hardcore hip-hop and the real syrupy soul, and just trying to find a medium between the two.
Yeah, I feel you, man. You know, the term I like to use when I listen to your tracks is, not necessarily all of them, but just the way you described it right now, I like to use the term blissed out beats.
Well, that actually works.
You know, because they're definitely smooth, they definitely got that syrupy thing to it, man, but the addition of hip-hop, or the elements of hip-hop behind it, kind of give it that edge where, you know, it's romantically funky, if you will. It's definitely blissed out for sure. Give me your basic philosophy now behind making beats.
Oh, you mean like the like the process that I actually go through? Or
yeah, you can give me an example of a process. What influences you? You know, do you go out to, do you necessarily go out to clubs? Do you just like to listen to samples? Or you just listen to the music constantly and something jumps out at you and gives you an idea?
Oh,
and
you just take your
tools, you know, something like that.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of funny because my friends kind of like laugh at me because basically I got my setup is my Mac. I don't have any type of external equipment. I don't have a studio or anything. Everything is on my MacBook Pro.
Right.
So I'm using like Apple Soundtrack as my primary software, which is does great. It's kind of like Fruity Loops on the PC.
Right.
But basically, you know, technology is incredible today, man, because you got your hands on everything that you need. You know, I mean, I'm basically got my entire studio in my backpack.
Exactly.
So basically, I roll with like 26,000 plus MP3 files that I acquired in iTunes. You know, so I've always got this huge, like just bunch of music with me. So I'll probably be sitting around, I might be talking to somebody, and I'm like, you know, doing random play through my iTunes. And like half of the songs I barely remember, I haven't even listened to. It's just something I want to catalog. So I'll hear something like maybe it's like an old obscure Billy Paul sample that just came like at 4 minutes after a song, and I'll be in the middle of a conversation and I will stop in mid conversation because this sample jumped out at me, and immediately I'm jumping on my computer because I got this feeling that I need to actually grab this and do something with it and put it away before I forget or I lose the feeling. So basically my process would be, say if I heard the sample, is I would jump into iTunes, drag the MP3 out. So what I need to do is actually chop the loop so I can actually set it aside. So there's a lot of different software on the Mac you can use, but the one that I usually use is called Sound Studio 3. And basically it's just a real simple program that just breaks down your MP3 into a waveform so that you can actually see what you're cutting and, you know, put in and out points, and then grab a loop, pull it out, and set it aside. So basically what I would usually do is I would hurry up, grab my loop, set it aside, and I would open up Soundtrack Pro and make me a new session, throw the loop in there, and then just have it just play and play and play. And the cool thing about a Soundtrack is you got one window, your main window, which has your loop and your track set up. And then on the left side, you have like a small window which shows any of like the small samples, the beats, the drum kits, anything that you have, they're available. So like when you're playing this loop, you can like maybe select drum beat number 4 and it'll automatically sync that beat with it so you can actually listen to a preview of how it would sound. So basically I got like about 500-600 drum tracks and maybe like 1,000 kicks and 1,000 snares just on the left side right at my fingertips. So I can actually click through like drum kits and I find something that I like, drag it over so that it syncs up with the loop, maybe add another kick and a snare. And then at that point, if I'm satisfied with kind of how it sounds, I'll just save it and I'll put it away. Because I'll probably like 2-3 weeks later actually go to it and actually fine tune it and make a song out of it. But the essential thing is actually finding and capturing these loops or this sound that you want and putting them away and just like putting them away for safekeeping until you're ready to actually work with them.
Soundtrack Pro, Logic, Ableton Live. You know, there's a bunch of tools out there that you and I are quite familiar with. With one extent to another. That's definitely allowing the composer, the remixer, the musician, the artist to know exactly what it is that you're doing. And it's just incredible the things that can be put together right now in terms of the technology and the tools that are available to do so. So, Soundtrack Pro sounds like a winner, and I'm saying that because I just picked up Logic Studio, which I
have
Pro 8, and that they're bundling Soundtrack Pro with that. So, you know, you and I have been kind of talking on the side about doing some collab and some remixes and what have you. So, I think I need to come up to speed and see if I can get down with. So, we'll go that.
Oh yeah,
we'll go that route.
We'll make it happen.
You know, that's right. Jumping back to last year, 2006. You released your first release called Blue, Kind of Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, I had the main thing about me is I've never really wanted to be an artist, like to be a producer. Like, you know, like a lot of people who are coming up are doing it because they want to make a living at it. They want to, you know, make beats for like Jay-Z or 50 Cent or something like that.
Right.
That's never been my thing. This has always just been a labor of love and something that I've had to do. Because I've been like just, you know, knee deep in hip hop since day one. And I've always felt like, I mean, I used to rap, I used to try to break dance, but, you know, we ain't gonna talk about that.
Right.
But but back in the, I mean, it was all, to me, it was all about the music and making beats and just for my enjoyment. And I got like, by the time I really got to Blue kind of Gray, I'd already put together like 250, 260 beats since I'd really started seriously recording stuff back in like 96. And it just occurred to me that I never really tried to put together a competent project of songs, you know, like to actually sit down and go, okay, I want to make a project of 20 songs that are like related to a certain mood. And Blue Kinda Gray, I named it that because that's usually the style of music that I like. I mean, I really got into Portishead and Lamb and people like that who are really on the chill trip hop type thing, because I look at them as more of a pioneer of what I was trying to do, because they basically took the rawness of hip hop, which is the beat and the drum cadence and things like that, and applied their own flavor to it, which was real melodic strings and weird tones and things like that. So when you heard something like early Portishead, early Lamb, or Massive Attack, or Tricky, or people like that, and you really heard what they were doing, it blew my mind, because it was something I had never really considered. You know, and when you're looking at, when you're into hip-hop, and then around that time, hip-hop started to really get stale. It was basically more of a, I need to get famous, so I need to do what the next man's doing.
Exactly.
And everything, you know, like gangster rap came, everybody sounded the same. Then it was like the De La Soul, the Daisy Age, everybody had to come out like that. So hip-hop started forming into these categories that were pretty much the same. And got kind of stale. The innovation was kind of like, you know, on a downside. So then, out of nowhere, you got like Portishead, these white people from Bristol, who, you know, who are taking essentially what the core of hip hop and actually flipping it and doing something new with it. That kind of blew my mind.
Exactly.
And I went into this obsession of trying to find anything trip hop or chilled related. And during that time, kind of like inspired me to actually get back into really trying to do something. So basically I wanted to take that trip hop element, that kind of like twisting, and actually bring it back more into a soul thing. You know, like a lot of people say that my music is stuck like in the mid 90s and that renaissance when you had Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul and Pete Rock, CL Smooth, like all these people who are really taking like jazz samples and things like that and making that type of music. It's kind of like that was like my prime time when I was really in love with hip-hop,
right?
You know, and you can hear it in my music. I'm still kind of stuck back there, even though like hip-hop's kind of moved on and it's doing its own thing. Anything that I usually put out is usually like steeped in that era. So, you know, most of the people who actually enjoy my music are kind of like the people who actually grew up primarily in that era, and that's like real, real cool.
Oh yeah, most definitely. That is, I think, an area of music right now that is not necessarily making a comeback per se, but it's so popular in the midst of, like you mentioned earlier, what is commercially hot. And
yeah,
what is commercially hot these days has, at least in my mind, less of a longer life than what it used to have years ago. Mm-hmm. Actually, in the 90s, with Pete Rock and the Native Tongues, Run DMC, and things like that, it's a whole different story right now. So to have what it is that you're putting out, to have what Massive Attack is putting out, Portishead, mm-hmm. Bent, Art Bleak, whole bunch of cats. Mark Farina, everybody's doing this thing, which is just blending this whole hip-hop blissed out kind of a thing that's really popular on the internet radio stations, and it's really blowing up in a way that's not necessarily seen by the public, but
yeah,
by the real, so to speak, real music listeners who can appreciate the hybridness, if you will, of what's going on. It's hot. It's definitely hot stuff.
And it's getting out there, like, because you look at, I mean, look at, people don't understand the power of the internet and technology that we have right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look at, you had like Lil Brother and Ninth Wonder, right? I mean, Ninth Wonder, Lil Brother, blowing up. But beforehand, they were like, them and like the Justice League down in North Carolina, I believe it is, Riley.
Yeah.
Really putting out some solid, solid hip-hop stuff. I mean, really soulful type stuff. Knife Wonder, like a hero of mine, because basically he brought to the forefront the fact that you didn't need a full studio to do stuff. He basically was putting together beats in Fruity Loops.
There you go.
And just like chucking beats out to like Justice League, which is like a big crop of just MCs. So it was like suddenly one day you turn your head and there's like just this swarm of just hot artists, you know, and you got like Knife Wonder and Crisis behind the beat for the Justice League, and they're just incredible. And then from there, you know, you really want to know about the power of the internet when Fonte from Lil Brother hooks up, you know, with Nicolay, you know,
right.
And they had never even met each other. They put together the Foreign Exchange album, you know, just from passing stuff back and forth over the internet. That is crazy. If you listen to that album, it's just incredible. Because this cat in the Netherlands, you know, this white cat in the Netherlands just putting together beats and shucking them off to Fonte, and he's putting rhymes over it. It's just, you know, you never would have guessed. It sounds like something like somebody spent like, you know, a grip of money and went to the studio and put this thing together. But in fact, you know, they were just, for the love of music, they were just passing stuff back and forth. And before you knew it, they had an album, right?
Right, exactly.
And it's just incredible. People just, I mean, artists out here just don't know. I mean, you got like MySpace and Verb and Pure Volume and Reverb Nation. All these sites that are popping up that are allowing artists to actually collaborate on things. It's just incredible, man. I mean, it's no longer are you going to need to be complacent with the stuff that the record companies and the media are shucking out to you. I mean, everything that you want, everything that you need is out there. It's just a matter of actually getting out there, you know, finding it, you know, making it, and then putting it out there yourself. It's just incredible.
You brought up a number of good points that we're going to get to in some following questions. Excellent, excellent commentary on that. Let me go back to one of the original points that you brought up, and actually segues nicely to the next question, is collaborations. I know that I've spoken to you, you know, here and there about not you just doing your own material, but you hooking up with local area artists there, whether they be vocalists, whatever the case is, getting together, pulling out Soundtrack Pro, doing your thing, having somebody come by, lay some vocal tracks or whatever, and just putting together something that's dope. Give me your philosophy behind collaboration.
I think collaboration is like the greatest thing ever. I mean, especially in this day and age. The cool thing about collaboration is you can always help another person reach that next level or be able to take it to the next level. My main collaboration right now is with a brother that I actually work with. I had met him when I first started working where I'm at now, but we really didn't vibe too much, you know. And somehow he found out that I actually messed with music a little bit. And he was a real private person, so it took him a while to actually come out and say, yeah, I do a lot of writing.
Right.
You know, I've been working on a few things. And I was like, well, man, you know, I got you know, a little cheap microphone. I got to sit here in my studio, in my office. It's closed off. Nobody here. Come by, you know, sing some of my stuff. So he actually came over, and he actually did, like, one of his older songs over just a drum beat.
Okay.
You know, and he was like, okay, yeah, that's kind of what I'm working with. I'm like, okay. So I took that a couple days later. I just whipped up a beat and threw it under there, came back and gave it to him, and it blew his mind because he never realized how simple it was or how another person's ear could come in and recreate what he was doing. I had totally recreated what his idea of what that song was. He was like, yo, we need to get together and actually try to work on some stuff.
Cool.
So, yeah, so it's been like about a year and a half where we've just been actually growing to know each other, and we've basically right now started putting together a serious project that he's been wanting to do called Clarity. He has a group called The Rhythm Teachers. Where basically he's been like collaborating with a lot of artists. A lot of artists have been coming in, coming out. At first he was really into the acoustic stuff, then it was the meaty stuff, and now it's more into like the, you know, my stuff with the sample based syrupy soul type thing. And we've got like about 20 songs under our belt.
Oh, man.
You know? Yeah. And it's just, I mean, and it's so cool because it's not like something we had to work on. It's like, yo, I instant message. He's like works on the other side of the building, right? So I'll instant message him and say, yo, I just came up with this new beat, check it out. Email it over to him, you know, loop, 5-minute loop. He comes back because he recorded the vocals, you know, and he's going to hit it because he has Soundtrack also. So he'll bring it over the source files and go, look, this is what I did. Have him, he's done singing and chorusing over the loop. I take that loop out and I actually build a serious track up under what he did. And it's just incredible, you know, because basically you're thinking that you need to sit there in the studio with an artist and coach him through this. But basically it's like a back forth thing, you know, where it's like, you know, I make the beat, then you'll sing over it. I fine tune it, and then we'll put it away. And, you know, before you even know it, you actually got a real project that's growing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And that's so common. And again, out of that comes some just incredible stuff. And the reason I think it's so incredible, and we'll touch on this a little bit later too, I'm sure, is that it's unconstrained.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Well, the cool thing, there's a philosophy I've always ran with, and that's with, you have a lot of artists who are saying that the music is their art. The music is from their soul. The problem with that is when your art form, whether it be painting or music or acting or anything like that, when it becomes a source of your income, when you're actually working for somebody in that capacity, you have to compromise your art. And I don't think it becomes art anymore. There's a lot of artists who are out right now who, you know, if you listen to a lot of the early work that certain artists do, and I don't want to really name any names,
sure,
but, you know, and you could actually hear like the art and the love for the music, but there comes a time when you sign with a record label or you realize, you know, you've got three kids and a wife and you need to actually feed your family, you know, and basically getting a Switch Beats beat instead of this younger artist who you love, younger producer that you love, get that Swiss Beats rather than his, will, you know, elevate you from 150,000 copies sold to like 600,000 copies sold. What you gonna do?
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, so there's kind of a fine line between art and your job. So the cool thing about what a lot of us are doing with the collaborations and things like that, it is unconstrained. There really isn't something that's actually forcing you to compromise your art. You're basically doing what you want to do, whether it's taking a spoon and banging on a trash can. If you consider that music, then that's your art. That's your music. You shouldn't compromise that. Now, the rest of the world may think it's crap, but that really doesn't matter, because if you can pull that spoon banging on a trash can out, you know, where you loop it for 5 minutes and you can sit there and nod your head and say that's dope, that's art. You should keep that. You shouldn't. I mean, it sounds stupid, but the fact of the matter is that's the truth.
You know, Todd, I'm laughing at that example you gave. It's so on point, because I was watching this this video clip on YouTube with Busta Rhymes and Timbaland.
Uh-huh.
Bus was over at Timbaland studio, and you know, he's a comic, he's a clown. You know, yeah. They were sitting there talking, and Busta Rhymes was talking about Spliff was with Timbaland, and yeah. Timbaland was making this beat with a plastic cup and some pencils. You know, and they just had a ball talking about that thing. You know, Bus was in there cutting up, man. And every time I see that portion of the video, I'm just cracking up. But you know, it lays truth to what you just said, man.
Yeah.
It all depends on whatever it is that you're doing being part of what you're trying to express and part of what you call art and part of what someone else may appreciate. You know, so that's definitely true about what you're saying. There's no question about it.
Yeah, and I think people need to realize that a lot of this stuff is free, because I don't want to say the majority, but a good portion of the people out here are doing this just for the love of it. You know what I mean? So it's like, you jump online. A lot of people say a lot of stuff about MySpace, but it is just like a melting pot of musical artists. That's just incredible. Just recently, this dude Chris Griffin, who is one of the producers for a group out of Houston called HISD, and these dudes. I have never in my life heard of this group, but and the dude was like, "Yo, you know, because." He heard a lot of the stuff that I was doing with flowing.com, a lot of the mixes. And he was like, "Yo, you know, my name is Chris. I'm a producer for this group. We're releasing our album next month. Here it is. Check it out. If you like it, you know, give us a pub, throw it in the mix." And I checked, you know, I'm thinking, you know, I get a lot of stuff in the mail, because a lot of people don't try to pass music on to most of the stuff I'm not really into, because it's mostly the Southern hip hop, now MTV type stuff. So right, I'm like, right. Okay. I started playing this stuff, and you would swear to God that this was like somewhere in the realm of like Little Brother, Strange Fruit Project, stuff like that. I mean, real, real soulful. hot hip hop stuff coming out of Houston, not a place where you would actually think this type of stuff would come out, you know?
Exactly right.
And his main thing was like, yeah, you know, a lot of people were pigeon-toed with a certain style because we're coming out of Houston. So it's like real, it's like pulling teeth trying to get our stuff out there and tell people, you know, yo, this is what we're doing, this is what we're about, because once they hear we're from Houston, you know, there's a quick shutdown. Oh, we don't play that type of music, you know? And it's just like, this cat actually found me like on MySpace, you know, and the fact that I actually have people with this incredible music actually coming to me now just makes me feel, you know, I can't even tell you how it makes me feel, because I just knows that there's never really going to be a time where I'm going to be like bored with music. There's always going to be something fresh and new, because for every, you know, for every person that actually can find you and give you the music, there's probably like 100 other people who are like waiting in the wings to actually put together something dope and to actually somehow get it to you.
There's a lot of technology sites, or I should say really social networking sites or pure music networking sites like MySpace, but I happen to find MySpace to be pretty much the same way you described it, man. It's a virtual melting pot of about any genre you can get. Yeah. And you and I have talked about this on the side many times, man. It goes back to this unconstrained thing. There's so much hot independent stuff out there. It's mad crazy. I mean, I'm sure you can stay on MySpace just for the sheer purpose of just surfing around trying to find some hot stuff. You can stay in there for hours on end, man, and most likely you will find what you were looking for, if not more.
Oh, I mean, the MySpace top 8 friend list is your best friend. It's your best friend, because exactly, you know what you do? It's kind of a game to me. If I have like an hour to kill, this is what I'll do. I'll go find a group that I like Lil Brother or Strange Fruit Project,
right,
and I'll just start jumping. I'll just start doing, it's kind of like 6 Degrees to Kevin Bacon. You just start jumping through the friends list. You know,
exactly.
It's like, oh, this group, I've never heard of this group. Let me click on that. You jump on their stuff and listen to their music. Whoa, it's dope. It's just like Lil Brother. Never heard of him. Jump through theirs. You can find, I mean, like when I'm trying to get together music for like my mixes that I put out for Flow Inc, and I'm like short material, I could spend like 2 days just jumping through MySpace just to find new music. You know, contact these artists, say, yo, I want to showcase your music in this mix. And these, and you would kind of think that a lot of the artists would be real guarded about their stuff, but
right,
they show you nothing but love.
Nothing but love.
I mean,
exactly.
Nothing but love. I mean, I put out a letter to, I like send a message to somebody saying, yo, I heard this song, I love it, I just wanted to know if it was possible if I could throw it in the mix. 5 minutes later, you know, I got this long, like 7-paragraph, you know, thank you with like links to like their entire album. You know,
noted, like, exactly.
You know, and it's all love. You know, you throw that in the mix. You know, it's such a symbiotic type thing, man. It's like you got these artists with this music you know you're gonna love. You take that, throw that in a mix where you have like a real audience that craves that type of music. You're helping them out because you're bringing this built-in audience that loves your genre, you know, right to you.
Right.
You know, and then these artists get the word out to other artists saying, yo, I got like, you know, 300 more hits because this cat put my song in his mix. Get your stuff over to him. See what he can do for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. I mean,
you know?
it's a you scratch my back, I scratch yours.
It's total
exposure that was always there, but not as instantaneous and not so readily available as it is right now, based upon the technology that allows that. And speaking of that, let me see if I can segue. We've kind of covered a couple good points, but considering music technology, number one, number two, the industry.
Yeah.
And number three, let's talk about marketing, the selling, and the distribution of music and its impact on the record industry as we know it today. We've got downloads, we've got iTunes, CD Baby, we've got a bunch of, a whole ton of net resources that allows an artist to put their music up, have it downloaded. And I'm talking about actually professional artists too.
Yeah.
What's your take on how that affects the juggernaut of the music industry, the way that it is currently operating, the way it has operated in the past? Do you find it to be a threat? Do you find it to be an impact? Or do you, like many artists, especially those who are independent artists, find it as a way to break free of what the industry has truthfully kept a lot of artists under lock with?
Well, that's an interesting question, and it's kind of like a difficult one also.
It is.
Yeah, I think right now, well, first off, the music industry, the record business is that. It's a business. I mean, anybody who tries to tell you that or steer you from that is either delusional or they're lying. Basically, it's about bucks. I mean, you have Virgin Records or a lot of the other ones. I don't know why I said Virgin, but there's a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. But the music industry in general is all about making money.
Absolutely.
So basically, their plan is to find what sells best and put it out there, or to fabricate what they want you to buy and basically just bombard you with it, which is basically what MTV and the rest of them are.
Excellent point.
You know, the problem with that is, and now I don't want to get into a thing where I'm like kind of bashing
current music,
you know. My problem isn't that there's certain types of music. The problem is that there isn't, all music isn't available equally to the buying public. Basically, it's, you know, this is going to be the hot trend, and everybody follows the hot trend, and that's what they push. So, like, right now, the Southern rap type thing is the big thing right now. So that's, like, predominantly what you see, like, on MTV, your MTV Raps, 106 in Park, all of these video shows, and that you hear on, like, the power station.
Yep, absolutely.
But there's this, you know, undercurrent of so many other different types of, like, hip-hop and soul and things like that that just aren't getting the push that they deserve. So I don't think there's a problem with what's being peddled to us, but I think that there should be a broader selection of types of music that we all should get access to. So I mean, basically, you know, I think you know, like, country should get a lot bigger push than it's getting right now. I think even pop music is kind of like falling to the wayside. But, you know, it'd be cooler if, like maybe, like, all forms of hip-hop, all forms of rock, all forms of pop, of country, all these different forms of music were readily available equally, you know, on radio, in videos, and on the web. And that's the one cool thing about the web right now, is that people are finally discovering that it can be a tool to actually get your stuff out. So you get somebody like a Prince, who really had beef with his record company and just said screw y'all and stepped off and actually just started giving his music away and selling his music on, you know, on online, you know, until he was in a point where he actually controlled his name, controlled his music, and controlled how he was going to sell it, and then jumped back into the game with, like, record companies and things like that. So you see artists like that who are actually pioneering what, like, the web technology and other things like that will actually, you know, help them to, like, you know, to push their stuff to the masses. As for, like, the starving or up-and-coming artists, things like MySpace, like Pure Volume, Verb Nation, iMeme, all of these social sites that are heavy on music are, like, the perfect tools, because basically you have your advertising right there. You got your music up there. All you need to do is push people to the sites, and the more sites you on, you know, the better chance that people are going to start hearing your music. Now, it's not going to be as successful as having a commercial on TV or having a video playing like five times a day on MTV or on VH1, but it's to start. And as more people actually get on the web and broadband becomes bigger, soon you'll be able to just basically throw your video in an email and push it out to everybody and say, look, here's my new video, or put these songs out there, or, you know, all types of advertising just through the web. I think a lot of people are going to come up with innovative ways to market themselves on the web. It's just going to be a matter of time right now.
I think that any way that you slice it, the web has made music distribution, availability of artists widespread, as opposed to the way it was years ago. And that's that. You definitely cannot argue that. And Prince was a perfect example. You were actually up in my head because I was going to bring him up as an example, and you eloquently put it in such a way that it was a perfect description of how the web/technology has had an impact on the record company. So that's definitely a true point. In your travels over the last couple of years, I know there's been a bunch of people that have come your way, a bunch of people that you've hung with, you're involved in Flow Inc. And you can talk a little bit about that. But, we talked on the side jokingly, especially in reference to the last podcast that I heard you on, and that was making reference to probably, I guess, from what I understand, one of your closest buddies, Mr. Eric Flavors.
Oh, Mr. EJ, my sensei.
The sensei, yeah, he's the man. Everybody who's rolling around in that, who's involved and has a desire to listen to and a liking to soul music and that stuff that has been the foundation for what we're doing for so long, probably has come across EJ in one form or another, and we just want to pay homage to the sensei, and
the sensei.
He's done a lot of good stuff, and he's got the hottest mixes around in terms of what he's doing regularly week to week, and he's not the only one doing it, but he's definitely got some experiences and background. So
Godfather.
EJ, yeah, if you listen, man, we're just doing a quick head nod and tip of the hat to you real quick, man. Definitely, no doubt, man. Current projects, you got anything that you're working on outside of this brother at work that you were talking about earlier? Anything outside that you're working on?
Actually working on my next CD, which is called Water Under the Bridge, which is basically just an extension of what Blue Kinda Gray was. Another cool thing about doing your own thing is that you really don't have a timeline. So Basically I started working on this like the first part of the year. But, you know, it may be like a week where I'll come up with six songs, or it may be like one song in like 6 months. It doesn't really matter because you only do stuff when you feel it. So I'm not really expecting to do anything with this, like, you know, I'm not expecting to finish it until maybe sometime next year. So it's kind of like a labor of love. A brother of mine who I've been like down with, like a brother to me, Robert Fortune, otherwise known as T-Bob, my boy down in Southern California, living in the Inland Empire. He just started up a new record label called Off Balance Records, Off Balance Entertainment. Cat is like, I mean, he's my idol when it comes to production. He built a studio in his garage, and I mean, just from scratch.
Right.
Decided one day, you know, I need to build a studio, and took like a year, but he built this thing up, you know, little by little. And the cat is just crazy. Got his Mac set up. I actually talked to him into getting Macs.
Good looking out.
Exactly. Got to expand that. But he's got the setup, and the stuff he's coming out with, I mean, it's just crazy. You know, he's got like a lot of artists under his belt right now. He's about to drop his first album, actually like compilation album, and start the next year. And I got like a couple of tracks on that.
Oh, that's dope.
So that's coming out pretty good. So and I'm just doing a lot of collaborations, man. I'm getting a lot of people off of MySpace, my boy Fabe Knight, who does the Friday Favecast. He just popped up a couple of times, found some of my beats, and just did some singing over them. Stuff was crazy, crazy dope. So we've done two songs. Maybe we're going to do a couple more. You know, hoping I'm going to get a collaboration with you. We've been talking about it for how long?
We got to hook it up, man, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we now have actually the common tool to work it out. And your stuff is dope. Your graphics go along with the music, man. You know you got to hook me up. Once I start putting out some stuff, man, your graphics are dope. We got to have that whole essence wrapped up in the whole music thing. So,
we'll
definitely hook it up, man. And like you said, like we both said throughout the podcast, you know, technology will allow us to do this thing easily and in our own time. So it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen.
I can't wait.
Yeah, definitely, man. Two more things I want to talk to you about real quick. Go ahead and prop up Flow Inc. Tell us a little bit about that.
Flow Inc., we're a music collective. Basically, a bunch of brothers that really ain't met, but... First off, I was like doing a lot of blogging and throwing mixes like back in 96, 97. Then down the line, EJ showed up online and pretty much like introduced me to audio blogging and to the actual web blogging. So that was cool. Then another cat who had started a site called flowinc.com, which is basically doing a lot of in-club type dates. He basically was setting up like poetry readings and small dates for artists like Dwelle and Eric Robeson back in the day. he found me online and was saying, yo, I'm digging what you're doing with the mixes and stuff. Check out my mixes. So I went over to his site, to Flow Inc., and he has some real dope music. I mean, just, like, it was hot music I had never heard before, a lot of underground stuff, because he's based in St. Louis. And he just said, well, you know, me and my partners decided we're going to relaunch the site. It's going to be heavy on mixes, and I wanted to know if you'd be down with that. I'm like, yeah, sure, sure. So I kind of jumped on board, and later on, EJ actually jumped on board. So now, EJ in Atlanta, I'm in San Francisco. Sincere is in Washington, D.C., and Charles is in St. Louis. And then we got a couple of other people that's providing mixes, like DJ Dez from Slum Village, Dirk from Germany, and then a couple of other cats. So basically what we're doing right now, we're putting out like mixes every other week. We got a listener base of like around 40,000 plus right now, so it's really getting heavy.
Oh, yeah.
So right now it's basically online mixes, getting a lot of these struggling artists with a great sound out there to a lot of people, trying to generate some ad advertising for them, and, you know, kind of a symbiotic type thing. Scratch your, like you were saying, scratch your back, you know,
you
I'll scratch yours and things like that. And then also going to probably be getting into like party promotions, concerts, and things like that down the line. A lot of stuff in the can, you know, not a stuff like in the queue.
Right.
But right now it's just mixes.
Sounds good, man. Definitely. We're talking music technology and the internet, so I think it's a perfect time to ask you about where your web presence is on the net. Give us the websites that we can find you at. I'll put them in the, in the blog post, but shoot them out real quick.
Oh man, this is way too many. Okay, first off, I'm a social network junkie, so I'm everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, so my main site, todkelly.net, which was my main blog site, which I'm actually turning into like an audio only site now.
Man, I saw it for the first time I took a look at it in a while. It was yesterday actually, and in between yesterday and the last time I saw it, but you really got it hooked up nice.
Good looking out. Yeah. I tried to, you know, I didn't know how much traffic I was really getting to it. I was getting a lot of comments about what people wanted to see in it. Basically, it was like, you know, I found my way here from your mix library.
Because right.
Basically, I had every mix I had done plus a listing. So when somebody would do like a search for an artist, it would always jump over to one of my mix pages. So
okay.
I had to redesign that and make it more intuitive so people can find what they wanted. So I was like, you know, I'll just turn it into an all music site since that's what everybody's coming to.
Cool.
Got that. I'm also on MySpace, myspace.com/biglaversustodd, all one word. There's another site, great music site called Verb.com, VRB.com. And I got a Big Law Versus Todd page on there. It's kind of like MySpace, but it's a lot more cleaner. And it caters more toward the artists. What else? There's Pure Volume, which is another music-based social networking type site. Verb Nation, which is something new, which deals with music, but also with getting out where you, like, you know, your concert dates and things like that.
Okay.
Humble Voice, another one, catered toward the artist, where, you know, whether it's music, painting, writing, stuff like that. There's a whole, I'll have to send you a list, man, because it's like too many to even.
Yeah, the list can go on and on. You gave us a couple good websites, especially where people can come and check out what it is you're doing artistically. So I'm glad you threw those in there, man. In closing, is there anything that you want to add? Anything whatsoever based upon the topic that we discussed tonight?
This is an incredible time to be an artist. I mean, the fact of the matter is, if you got some type of creative talent that you actually want to express, you know, you have all the tools right now to do it. There's nothing that's hindering you from doing what you need to do. If it's music, you don't need a studio. You know, if it's painting, you know, paint, draw, write, do whatever you can. You can actually get that out to the people that, you know, that if you want to like showcase what you're doing. The web is just an incredible place, and you know, we've barely tapped, you know, the full potential of it right now. So this is the time to actually get knee deep in it. If you're not really web savvy, jump head into it. Start just digging in there, you know, and I guarantee you'll find something useful.
I can definitely relate to that, man. I definitely agree with that. Todd, it was a pleasure, man. I definitely appreciate you giving up some time to talk about something that we've been talking about forever, man.
Pleasure's all mine, man. This is cool. This is cool as hell.
Oh, you know, no doubt. No doubt. Well, look, man, I'll be hollering at you soon, man, and I'll let you know the details of when this podcast will actually be up on the web. I'll holler at you soon, man.
Sounds good, man. Thanks.
All right, man. Peace.
Peace.